Ah, you're very welcome back to the programme, and you wanted a bit more conversations with just regular folk in the county. We aim to deliver. It's not just a regular folk. He's the one and only Paddy. How are you getting on, Paddy? Thanks so much for joining us. Paddy Gamble?
Yes, how are you getting on today, Greg?
I'm doing good, Paddy. You're a bus driver.
Yes, I'm a bus driver for nearly the last 2 years now, I have been.
Yeah.
Driving for Mangan Tours there from Mina Clady to Letterkenny on a Letterkenny service run there, so do be.
Why did you decide to get into bus driving?
Something kind of had a passion for throughout the years, driving, meeting people, you know, interacting with a lot of ones. I think that would be the most option for me to go and meet a lot of people and stuff like that and get to know a lot of people within the county and, you know, listen to their stories too as well and get some feedback. So I thought I'd always been a people person, so I thought it'd be the right job for me.
And what were you doing with Mangan Tours for the most part?
I was doing Letterkenny service, done a couple of tours with them, did a couple of trips too as well, VIP trips with a different couple of clientele ones. So I built a good clientele with a lot of ones, so, and just building experience from there on, you know.
Yeah, right? And it's not like you and the passengers. I mean, you build relationships with them, don't they? I mean, your short time with Mangan Tours, you made a lot of friends.
Yeah, I met a lot of good friends, a lot of good people too as well, and it was a great time there when I served there, and a lot of people appreciated my time and effort put into them, and did a few other wee things outside the box, you know. For Valentine's Day, I used to buy flowers this year for every female on the bus, like, you know, going in my way a wee bit extra too as well, you know, and show there's kindness in that job as well. It's just not a bus driver, like you're more than a bus driver kind of.
I see Mangan Tours put out a post looking for customers to post any photos. Any photos they had of you, any? What was your favourite? Any favourites there or anything embarrassing? No.
There's Joseph had a few ones there. I think he put one up there one time that we were way coming back from Manchester. We were and we was in for the dinner, you know, on the ferry across, and we seen this sort of sauce, you know. I thought, geez, this looks quite nice, you know. And poured over the spuds with the pie, and all of a sudden I found it was just custard, like. So, but you laugh at them things, it's funny. But it tasted well, you know, give it a shot to anybody, like.
Yeah, okay. You did a few airport runs, did you, for people gigging in this region? Anyone interested in
the Vinga boys, done a Belfast run the whole way down from Belfast, the whole way down the Derry Beg there. They did a bit of...
So literally the Vinga bus was coming.
Yeah, we were fairly we made it happen that night, so we did anyway, like. So
were they good crack or just chilling?
They were good,
the
they were chilled out, they were nice people, had a talk and things like that. We played a few tunes and had a couple of good laughs and stuff like that, so it was definitely entertaining on the day, it was, like. So
Do you think, like, it? I think it depends on what kind of bus work you do. You know, there's the school bus work, there's the tour bus work, and there's the bus Aaron McGinley's coach, yes, kind of stuff work, you know, the longer haul stuff. Do you think it takes a particular type of personality to do the longer runs? Because, you know, I mean, obviously you're fully focused, but you're for a lot of the time too, you're alone in your own head as well.
Yeah, because if nobody really chatting, what I kind of do is whoever sits in the front of the bus and stuff like that, I tend to have a chat with them, but you're still concentrating on the road at all times. But it's nice to interact with people. It breaks the run for you too as well. But there is a level of concentration on that job, day to day basis.
Because it's tiring. It's a little bit like this job, and I'm not comparing our two jobs, but you know, like, you use a lot of energy in concentrating all the time.
Yeah, you're always,
you know,
looking,
what I mean. So people think, all right, you're sitting on your backside. It's not really like that, because I don't know if it's a nervous energy or whatever, but you tend to use quite a lot of your energy just with pure focus and concentration.
Yeah, when you're driving, especially a coach that size, like a 13-metre coach, you know, and you're thinking you're always two steps ahead in front of yourself, you're always on the lookout at roundabouts, people out walking, kids leaving school. The level of concentration there is that you need to be up there with the best, you know. It only takes a split second, and it could be an accident within that second.
So I'm already thinking that you've been mistaken for a celebrity.
Yes, that's right.
Don't tell me about that.
Well, we did, me and Joseph, we did a trip to Paris last year around France too, of different parts of France. It's a beautiful, beautiful country to see. And we're heading to Paris today, and I'd be winding people up in the bus and having a crack with them and saying, I'm a big star here, been over here a few times. Now they know me quite well, and they're like, aye, Paddy, whatever you think yourself. We got onto the wee boat, and we went for a trip down the Champs-Élysées and stuff like that. And we went back to the back of the boat, me and Joseph, and he said, sit up the back of the boat there, Paddy, we get a picture, you know, you can make a few pictures for your Facebook page. I said, sure, why not? All of a sudden, I was back of the boat taking a picture. All of a sudden, all the Chinese ones were coming over to visit me. So they were like, so
they thought you were something.
They thought
well,
something.
You are something, but you know what I mean. Someone
they famous. Must have something else. And Joseph, he did some laughing. So he did. I don't know. He has a video of me. He says, I don't know how I held the phone. And there are family pictures, kids' pictures, the whole lot they were. So
yeah, but I mean, like, there's families in China now, like with you, a picture of you and them in a frame, the famous Paddy Gamble from Europe. Like, what?
On their kitchen table, like, or even better, again, maybe up on the billboards around China somewhere. You never know.
I used to say, right, that was some of the highs. What are the low points?
Low points driving. You know, the days are long. In fairness, you know, but you take the good with the bad in these jobs and stuff like that. But what you take the good things more than the bad things out of it, like your people, the people you chat to every day, you know, and track with. You know, it makes the day a lot easier. But apart from that, there's no really low days in the job because you're getting to travel around like Manchester, Liverpool, different trips, meeting new people and having a crack with football guys and stuff like that. It's nice and stuff like that. So more good than bad, Greg.
Did I hear you accidentally once tried to deliver a bridge down in Dublin? Is that...
Oh, no, that was... people say, what accident would you have? I said, none so far, touch wood. Like, but when you go in Dublin, all low bridges ever in Dublin, like, you know, you always get nabbed with low bridges down the road. So you try and turn a 13-metre bus and there's a bridge in front of you saying it's only a 3.2 and your bus is 3.6. So
that's not going to squeeze it.
That's not going to squeeze it today. But apart from that... it's funny at the time, you're trying to turn and people's laughing and having a joke about it. I took a wrong turn and... Well, I used to get a good laugh out of it too as well. Like,
there's a huge demand on for drivers at the moment. Bus drivers. Would you encourage people to get into it?
I think, you know, for the younger people now, it's they haven't, you know, it's not coming through. But I definitely would recommend any young person to go for this. You know, it's just more than the drivers. As I say, Greg, like, you're meeting a lot of people. You're on track with a lot of ones. There's good points in the job, people think. And it was a bit late coming in 21 before you can do the coaching and stuff like that. It's not when Lord over 18 you don't have that opportunity. Like, but I would highly recommend the job to anyone.
Yeah.
It's a great...
Because there's already a shortage, and it seems with the way they're jigging up the schools and what have you, the shortage is only going to get greater. And also, too, we have, depending on who you drive for, you know, this... limit that you have to sort of retire, I think, particularly with the bus Aaron runs at 70. Do you think that needs to be changed?
Well, to be honest with you, I think, you know, the drive, I think in your years of driving, you could drive 30 years. I think, you know, 60 is more than enough of driving within one period of time, you know. And that's just coming from myself. I'd love to retire when I'm about maybe 60. I can, you know, put the feet up and relax. You've done your time, you know. It's, I think, 70... your concentration, you have to change your license every 3 years, things like that. I think 60 would be more than enough to kind of finish.
Says the fella a long way from 60 or 70.
But yeah,
what age are you now?
I'm 37.
Right, we'll come back to you in 33 years and see if you're ready to hang up the steering wheel.
I'm hoping, that fingers crossed, I'll be able to hang up fairly shortly, let's see.
Hi, my name's David Gallagher. Paddy Gamble is my first cousin and a longtime friend. Could you ask him for me how we're getting on, and does he have any pumpkins for sale? He will do nothing but laugh.
Oh,
that's the story with the pumpkins,
Paddy.
It's okay.
Yeah, we will. Well, the whole thing about the pumpkins was I would sell anything, to be honest with you. And Halloween came around, you know, I'll be dressing up for Halloween and stuff. Like, I'd done actually this year, I had a Halloween outfit driving around the coach with me and Street Letter Kenny. There's a video of me and that too as well. There is, but I do anything for a laugh. And as the pumpkins came up, and I thought, geez, I might, you know, make a few pound here, make a couple of good ones, like, and I started making them and selling them.
Oh, you were cutting them out and all?
I cut them out whole lot, and I put the lights on them, and the whole lot. And David, I tried to sell David a few, so I did, like.
Did you make any money out of it?
No, nothing. Nothing. Okay. Didn't make a penny.
Well, so anyway, David also said, I want to wish him the very best. He's one of a kind and has touched the hearts of everyone he's ever met. Tell him I'm very proud of him and to keep doing what he's doing. He's the best, all right, which is quite nice. So you are going to Europe, are you?
going to head to Europe, Greg. Going to give it a go.
So where do you know where you're going yet?
There's 2 months of training first, Greg.
Yeah.
Involved. So I'm heading off down Saturday to get the flight to London and take off from London. Then do 2 months training, and it's over. There's Istanbul in it. There's Barcelona, Nice, Venice, Florence, Athens. It's a full variety around Europe. So I seen the opportunity. I thought rather do it now than later
you get to see a lot.
You get to see a lot, and you know, and learn with all the ones I've met here in Ireland and stuff like that. And you know, you use their jokes and on my travels now and next time around. That's the plan, Greg. And so
that's a fantastic. You use all the dad jokes you've heard from foreigners over the last couple of years, turn it back on them over.
That's definitely.
And do you know what kind of bus driving you'll be doing? Will it be like, you know, fixed runs, tours?
Just all tours, Greg. Every tours. There's 45-day tours and 12-day tours, 9-day tours, all different regions and stuff like that.
And this, I'm not asking anything personal here, but do they actively seek you guys out? Or did you just research it and say, right, I could... I'm just wondering how the act... Because if we have a shortage here, generally there's a shortage elsewhere.
Going to be shortage,
you know, so if we're short of nurses, they're going to be short of nurses elsewhere. Yeah. We're sort of doctors, lorry drivers, bus drivers. So are they actively recruiting the likes of yourself?
They recruit fairly year in, year out there. You know, people come and go in every job and every expect. So I think I seen it online and I thought, you know,
have a go. Yeah,
I'll have a go, and if I pass it, I pass it. If I don't, I don't. You know,
no doubt you will.
Like,
I suppose, is there a big difference sitting on the other side of the bus and driving on the other side of the road?
I've done it once so far, but haven't drove on the left side driving yet. But I've drove on the other side of the road. Like,
yeah, of course you have. And I
was in a European one, Mary Joseph, and that was good.
You
really enjoyed
it. Quickly,
people say roundabouts, but you can't go off. You can't go off the other side of the roundabout.
But once you figure it out,
you're good to go. Then
but it's just to keep you aware. Can you say hello to Paddy Gamble from Rosalie McDade? He's a gentleman and will be missed.
Oh, that's Rosalie. I know Rosalie from Letterkenny. I know about 100 and every person gets my bus. About 150 people. I know them all by their first name.
Yeah,
the whole lot by first name. I think it's a nice touch. I think people should learn. People on your bus, they should know.
There's nothing for some people. There's nothing nicer than hearing your own name, and that's not an ego thing or nothing. It just means that the person cares.
That's that. I think you do a wee small, but if they say hello, good morning, Roisin or Lisa or stuff like that, they might say, "Geez, he knows me," like, and stuff like that. So that's nice.
What's the most popular name on that run then? If you know 150 of them. Good question.
That's a good one. I'm trying to think. Is the Margaret is a bit good? 5 Margaret something that is like. It's a good 5 Margaret something that is like.
Margaret. All right. You finished with Mangan now, are you? Mangan
finished
tours.
Up with Mangan there last week. There we kind of had a wee small get together. Once on the bus came out the Arena 7, we had a good laugh and good couple of jokes and stuff.
Brilliant.
Like that.
And
so,
you're heading to London
on Saturday morning.
Excellent.
Now, yeah.
All right. Well, listen. Come here. We wish. I mean, obviously, it's a loss to the people that think so highly of you and for Mangan Tours as well. But it's, you know, it's new horizons for you. Who would deny anyone that? Tell Paddy I said hello. He's a lovely fellow, pure gentleman, Sarah Gallagher.
She's from Fulcarra.
That's exactly where she's from.
I know about every stop, every location, the whole lot. You can name any person that I could name where they're from.
Let's see you do that in Germany. We don't know.
Yeah, we'll give that a go. That fares it.
Well, listen, come here. We're not so interested to get you in to have a wee chat and learn a little bit about the work that you do and the life of a bus driver. You'd recommend it, as you say?
I'd recommend the job. Like, it's a great job to be in. It's the best. It's the best job I've been in a long time. Like, so I've been through a few good jobs. Like, so it's the best job I've been in.
All right, Paddy. Well, listen, best of luck with your career as you go forward. And as I say, you'll be sadly missed on the route that you're on and the people that know you. But as I say, onwards and upwards. And it's been lovely having you in.
Thanks very much.
Nicola Doherty says, yes, Paddy, how's things? You know where Nicola is?
Nicola Doherty. Nicola Doherty.
The tests are on. She probably has. She's probably not on your bus.
Probably not. Like, probably
she's
not.
Probably just saying hi.
Maybe. No, Nicola, I'm not too sure. I'm trying to think.
No.
There's a lot of people texting me there going, saying, oh, what time you on it?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of stuff coming through there.
Stuff. All right, listen, it's been great having you in, as I say. Continued success to you. And thanks. Now we're joined on the programme by Amanda Brown, author of No Peace Until He's Dead, Amanda's story of child abuse at the hands of Davie Tweed and her journey to recovery. David Tweed was a lauded rugby player for both Ulster and Ireland, a DUP councillor and a prominent Orange man. And to the outside world, he maintained a veneer of upstanding citizenship through his political and sporting life. But at home, things were very, very difficult. Amanda Brown, as I say, joins us on the programme. Amanda, thank you very much for your time. I really do appreciate it.
No, you're welcome. It's good to be here.
How big of a decision was it to lay it all out on the table? You know, because this is kind of a subject a lot of people might want to bury their heads on, pretend it doesn't exist, focus on something else because this is too unimaginable, too painful. And I'm only on about readers, let alone the victims of this, one of the worst crimes that anyone could perpetrate. So how difficult was it to sort of say, right, I'm going to put it all out there?
It has been extremely difficult. It wasn't an easy decision to make. Initially, after his death, I consulted my sisters before I'd even spoken out about it to make sure that they were happy enough with me speaking out. And, you know, the reason behind speaking out was because of victims like myself, you know, and not just his victims, but all victims out there, you know, just to have to have experienced what we experienced. And what was published in the media before, whenever he was, you know, going through the court process and convicted, it was for other victims to, you know, not have to sit and watch that, you know, their abusers would then be, you know, be lauded in, you know, in death, and everything that they had done wrong was forgotten about.
And also, too, in telling this story, it's obviously the abuse that you were put through from the age of 8 by your stepfather, but it's also everything else that goes on in the house. You know what I mean? It's you know, there's an awful lot to this story.
Yeah. On top of the, you know, the abuse that I suffered, there was also the domestic violence, the domestic abuse that occurred, you know, the various elements of coercive control and... you know, I wanted to try and describe that as best I could so that people could understand. And I know myself from personally reading books whenever I was younger and going through certain stages and, you know, my healing process, that reading some books helped me. And I wanted this book to be the same for other people who were experienced in their own.
Like, you know, putting my son to bed last night and... it's that safe space. You tuck him up, he's in bed and he's happy now, and you put the monitor on and make sure he's happy and safe and content. And when he's younger, you check to make sure he's breathing and all that stuff you go through. I'm so sorry, Amanda, that from the age of 8 to 15, going to bed for you must have just been, you know, instead of it being your safe, comfortable space for people to love and care and protect for you, it was a nightmare for you almost every night. And it's so, so hard to even comprehend what you've been through.
Yeah, it wasn't even just that going to bed wasn't safe for me. It was just generally the house that I lived in wasn't safe. And that was from the age of about 4. You know, so I understand what you're saying because I have a son and he's free to be and you know, just... he's safe here at home and he can be and feel whatever he needs to, where from I was a very young age, I was walking on eggshells, you know, trying to manage this man's moods through fear that he would kick off and either hit my mum or, you know, that whatever would happen to us.
Just before we talk about, I want you to sort of explain to the listener how you tell your story rather than me trying to interpret it, because I think that's really important that you make that direct connection with them. I'm also sort of conscious in this day and age, and it kind of often comes back to this now, that if this book was written 10 years ago, you know, I think you'd be generally exposed to people who are sympathetic to you or what have you. But we do live in an age now on social media that some people seem to derive pleasure from maybe further victimizing you, or there's two sides to the story, or all the stuff that you might see on social media. Have you been exposed to that? Do you keep that out of your life? Is it something you're conscious of, or maybe hopefully it's not something you've experienced?
After his death, when I first spoke out, there was, you know, a lot of pushback. I haven't been paying attention this time around because I've been aware of there will be people who will still not want to believe that he was who he was, you know. And, you know, for some people, regardless of whether it was 10 years ago or now, there are people who will always not want to believe that this kind of stuff happens on their own doorstep, practically. So I haven't been paying attention to any of that. I haven't, you know, haven't been made aware of it. And, you know, I'm not interested in anybody who wants to try and say that there were two sides to any story. The message is out there for victims, and it's not for anybody else who wants to further victimise or abuse people.
Yeah, very good. Okay, so tell us how you tell the story in this book and how you wanted the reader to sort of, go through this journey with you.
Well, the way that I had written the book was I was writing it whenever I was writing it. I was writing, you know, the memories as they come up for me. And I did have a fantastic editor who helped me fill in the, you know, just to add colour to it. Because where I was sort of like putting the building blocks of the actual story down, she helped to pull out, you know, the finer detail, you know, in terms of what were you wearing? What was your granny's house like? You know, things like that, to help immerse the reader that wee bit more and bring them on that journey with me. Because that's what I wanted to do. Is it's not that I want to traumatise anybody or make anybody feel sorry for me. I want them to walk that journey with me to show how awful it has been. And I've been as honest and open as I can be in terms of how palatable it'll be for people to read. And I just wanted to pull them through that journey to where I'm at now, in terms of, you know, as well as in terms of where I'm at now on a personal level. It's also that whole idea that society perceives victims and abusers, you know, as they're portrayed in the movies. And, you know, abusers can be charismatic, outgoing pillars of the community. And then, you know, victims can also be strong, assertive, you know, people too. So it's about helping to change the narrative and the ideas of our, you know, around that. And I also want people who have experienced any of these issues to see themselves in this book, you know, to be able to relate and see themselves. And also, you know, there was this time 14 years ago was whenever I was planning, well, I would have been dead by now if I had have went through with my own suicide. And I felt, you know, reading a book like this might have helped me hang on in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it is a story of your recovery as well, and that's also a journey that you invite the reader on. And I kind of get the impression that you hope that someone at your lowest ebb is reading the book and it they hold on and find their own path to recovery.
Yeah, I do. I hope that, you know, the purpose of this book has been that it will help people. As I say, they'll maybe see themselves in this, you know, within the pages of this book, that they'll see themselves and they'll feel seen. And, you know, with that, then know that there is a path to the other side.
Yeah. And how difficult was the trial for you?
It was incredibly difficult. It was so challenging. You know, stepping into it without ever having been in a courtroom before in my life, I'd only ever seen, you know, court stuff on TV and movies and, you know, programs. So I'd never been in a court before in my life. It was really daunting. But as well as that, you know, it was an open court, and, you know, I had the press behind me. I had people who were there supporting him. You know, I obviously, there were people there who were supporting me, and witness support were fantastic and, you know, coming in and out of the court with me as well. But then you have this jury of peers. And you're talking about something that is that people don't want to talk about. Do you know, it's one of the most difficult things for anybody to discuss, and to lay yourself so bare and to be so vulnerable. And at a point in time where you're not actually properly healed from it either. Mm-hmm. Do you know, you're not even anywhere near, you know, healing from what you've experienced, and you're just there to like just open this wound. It was incredibly difficult. Mentally and emotionally.
And then he died in a motorcycle incident in October 2021 after the trial. What was the emotions at that point when you heard that news? Because I mean, it's kind of maybe hinted at in the title of the book, but
yeah. Well, Initially, there was a bit of disbelief. Initially, I didn't want to believe it until I had actually seen it in black and white for myself. And it was because I didn't want to let my guard down. You know, I didn't want to, you know, you take that breath out, you know, when you realize you've been holding your breath for a while and you just let your breath out. I didn't want to do that until I was sure. And yes, whenever I was sure, there was the initial concern for my sisters and how they would feel about it being his daughter, their daughter, you know, they were his daughters. So I had concern for them and, you know, how it would impact them and how they would feel about it. But, you know, once I had spoken with them and knew that they were okay, that's when I just, you know, I took my breath. Mm. You know, it was a relief. It felt like, you know, there was peace now.
Yeah, and there's a lot of chapters. There's a lot of chapters in the book that people will relate to in different ways. And I think one that I haven't had an opportunity to read yet myself, what I think we'll be interested in is chapter 15, The Burden of Guilt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the guilt that I have carried, and I think this is with any kind of sexual trauma, it's not just exclusive to me. You do carry a tremendous amount of guilt with you, especially upon hearing about, you know, other people. Whenever it was just me, I was able to hold it inside mm-hmm. this wee box mm-hmm. and, you know, compartmentalize it and put it away and just build my life around it. But whenever other people started speaking up, that's when the guilt really, really took over. And I went to a place of, you know, if I was that child again, I would have just ran into my mum screaming and let her know what had happened. And then all of these other people wouldn't have been hurt. But like, as my counsellor in Nexus had said to me at the time, you know, you're looking at this through the lens of an adult, you know, but you were a child acting on, you know, what you knew at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but it, like, I still hold a lot of guilt. It's okay. not as much, and it's not as heavy as what it used to be, but I still do hold some guilt.
You know, you're a qualified reflexologist and aromatherapist,
yes.
and your business is registered as a safe space for victims of domestic violence. Why is that important, and do we need more of that, I wonder?
I think we do need more of it. It was very important to me. To make sure that I was registered as a safe space. I work within the community. Mm-hmm. So, you know, my business premises is within the community, and it is important to me that there are more places like this that, you know, primarily these places are like in churches or, you know, schools and, you know, places like that. And that's great that you have that opportunity. But if you're, as a person who is suffering from domestic violence, you know, if you're being watched, you know, when your school is a safe place, you're not going to have the time to go in and talk to anybody, you know, in terms of something like that, because you're probably, your time's being monitored. So you go to the school and you come back again, you should be home by this time. But if you're coming for a treatment, like, I think more hairdressers should be registered mm-hmm. safe places. Mm-hmm. And so if you're coming for a treatment here and, you know, you want to open up and tell me, you have got the time, because you would assume that you've told your partner, you know, where you're going to be mm-hmm. and how long you're going to be away for. So you have that time, you know, to talk to whoever you need to talk to. You know, I will signpost. And what I can help do as well is, you know, plan, you know, along with the appropriate services and agencies, I will help plan, you know, the exit strategy, so to speak.
What an amazing service to be able to help with. So, of course, just in relation to the type of book this is, it is obviously it's a tough subject. It is harrowing, but it's also hopeful as well. There's that hopeful element to this. And it is also about your path. And I'm sure it's an onward journey. It's not, you're not at your destination now, fully at your destination now. Maybe you never might be, but it's about your path to recovery as well. And you hope it helps people as well as informs people. And listen, we can't hide away from the tough subjects because sometimes it's hard. We have to know, we have to understand, because we have to try as much as we can prevent this ever happening again. Okay, thanks so much for your time. I really do genuinely appreciate it, Amanda, and best wishes for you and all. Take care of yourself.
Yep, Thank you.
Bye-bye. That's Amanda Brown. Her book is out now. It is called No Peace Until He's Dead, My Story of Child Abuse at the Hands of Davy Tweed and My Journey to Recovery. Now, just to remind you and to celebrate International Women's Day, which will take place on March the 8th, a coffee morning and first aid demonstration will take place at Buncrana Garda Station on Wednesday the 6th of March. That is tomorrow. It's between 11am and 1pm. The event's being held in conjunction with and to raise funds for Buncrana Community First Responders Group. Everybody is welcome to come along to learn a little bit about first aid while also enjoying tea, coffee and treats. That's tomorrow between 11am and 1pm at Buncrana Garda Station. So just to mark your card there. Hi, Greg. I just don't understand what a durable relationship is and in what time frame does this relationship become durable? 2 weeks, 2 months, a year? Confused and not voting, says the listener. Another no ordinary person has a clue what they're being asked to vote for. And on it goes. Right, OK, we'll get to more of your comments as this morning wears on. But I want to welcome onto the programme now Councillor Rena Donaghy of the Fianna Fáil Party, confirming to us yesterday evening that she does not intend to seek re-election this June. Councillor Donaghy, a very good morning to you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning, Greg. Thank you very much.
How tough a decision was this for you to make, Rena?
Yeah, well, I suppose we're now approaching the June election, Greg, and after careful consideration with my family and friends, I have reached a significant decision regarding my involvement. So I suppose with a blend of emotions, I have decided not to contact the local election. However, I firmly believe that it is the right decision for me at this juncture in my life. A job, I feel that a job can be replaced, Greg, but precious time with the family cannot be. So, as you know, the passage of time is a relentless force, and as I reflect on the future, I recognise the fleeting nature of certain moments. My grandchildren, who are now in their infancy, will inevitably grow older, and I'm determined to cherish and prioritise these precious years with them. We have a new wee baby in our house at home, wee Molly, and it's hard to go out every day and leave her. So at the next election, she would be five, and I would have missed out on those precious young years. So I have just decided that it's the right time for me now to bow out. And hopefully my party will get somebody younger and with fresher ideas and fresh blood, and we can move on.
Yeah, I think it's a lovely reason too, and you framed it so well there, Rena. Who would begrudge you that precious time with your grandchildren? And also 30 years of service to the people of Inishowen and Donegal, having been first elected in 1994. In 1994, do you think you would ever have imagined that you would end up with 30 years under your belt, that you'd be the Cathaoirleach of your municipal district or the town council on numerous occasions, that you had the top seat in Donegal County Council as Cathaoirleach of the council? Did you imagine that ahead of you, I wonder, in the mid-90s?
No, to be honest, and I never, ever would have imagined myself going into politics either. It wasn't something that I had thought of. I had been working in social welfare for almost 13 years, and then I was asked to run for election in 1994, and I thought, oh my God, I know nothing about this, I know nothing about politics, I know nothing about roads or sewer or housing or all of those services that you need to know a lot about. But anyway, they came back and they asked me on two or three different occasions, would I run? And eventually I did. And it was a funny situation, because I did run to put one of my own party members out. A party member, God rest, Dermot McLaughlin, lost his seat because I ran. And it took me a long time to get over that, to be honest, because I thought, oh my God, they have asked me to run. Dermot would have asked me as well to run. And then I got in and he was put out. So that didn't lie well with me, to be honest. So then in 1999... I was canvassing before that for Cecilia Keaveney with Willie O'Dea. And I remember Willie O'Dea saying to me, what are you doing in Buchanan Town Council? You should be in the county council. Every door that I go to, you're very well known. Well, I would have been well known simply because I did work on social welfare. Mm. And at that time, it was very different in social welfare because the people from within a six-mile radius all came in to collect the money in the office. So I would have got to know an awful lot of people, and I would have did volunteer work for the community advice, the information society. There was no paid person there then. So I did that for about 5 years on a volunteer capacity, just giving information and that. So I suppose I was kind of fairly well known, and that was why I was asked in the first place. But as I say, Willie O'Dea and then Mary O'Coughlin, Mary Coughlin came along in 99 as well, and she asked me to go for the county instead of the town. Now, it was a big leap because to get elected to Buchanan Town Council, you probably would be elected with maybe, say, 200 votes. But to get into the county council, depending on how many would be running, you might need 2,000 votes. It was a big leap, but the people put their trust in me, and I was elected. And there I am since from then until now. But no, you're right. I never would have envisaged on day one going in. I mean, my family would have been always Fianna Fáil, but that was kind of as far as it went. But there's something about politics when you're in there, and when it comes to the next election, you're eager to go again. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. It's just something that gets into your blood. And you just say, no, when the 5 years is up, I'm not going to go again. And then when the 5 years comes up, You definitely do go again, and that's just try to explain, but that's mm-hmm. how it is.
No, I get you. Now, so, you know, regardless of political background, we've had very strong women in the council. Sadly, obviously, we still mourn the loss of Noreen McGarvey. Mary Therese Gallagher says she's not running again. You're not contesting it again, which leaves Niamh Kennedy currently as the sole female representative. It's important, I think, that as much as is possible, a council reflects its public. You know, that's a loss to politics. Obviously, with Noreen's very tragic and far too soon passing, but also your decision to marry Therese. You wonder the makeup of the next council.
Yeah, now that doesn't lie easy with me. The fact that Mary Therese is gone. Mary Therese was a fantastic public representative. And then Noreen's demise was an awful, awful, awful shock. And now that I am going, and there's poor Niamh as there on her own. And I would love to see the gender balance improve greatly on the council. You do need women. There is absolutely no doubt about it. And I'm not saying that women make better councillors than men, but they have a different outlook. You need them there. Greg, it's not a 9-to-5 job.
Yeah.
It's not a 5-day-week job. You know, people have families and children, although things have changed now. Men play a bigger part in rearing the children than what I would have started out first. And I have to say, my husband was very good and very supportive, and so was my family. And that's what allowed me to stay there.
Mm-hmm.
But we definitely need a gender balance in the council. And we have to do something about it. We have to change things. But do you know what? It's very difficult to get people to put their name forward.
Yeah, that's it.
You know,
it's getting the names on. And especially, you know, I think to the established parties, they have a job to do in that regard as well, because it can be particularly hard for independents or those from smaller parties to get over the line. But listen, there's options there now, because there's a lot of people, including yourself, not contesting the next election again. It's a thankless task to some extent, really, because, you know, you don't get the credit for when things are going well, but you get all the blame when things are going bad. It's a tough life, elected politics, or sticking your head above the parapet. I mean, Is there a political low point for you, Rena? Because I want to finish on the high point, you see. So I don't want you to think I'm being overly negative. But I mean, what is there a something that jumps out at you? Maybe at the beginning it was displacing another councillor. But I mean, what over the course of the 30 years, what has been the low point for you?
Things have always been fairly good. I don't think there was any low points as such. No, there were many very good points and very happy times, but there's nothing that was a low point that particularly jumps out to me, apart from the demise of some of our work colleagues and that.
Yeah,
you know, and you particularly Noreen in recent times.
Yeah, exactly. That was tough.
Yeah,
but on the on the positive side, I mentioned what you've achieved previously in terms of, you know, chair of the town council, the municipal district, Ciarán of the council, chair of ETB as well. I know you have a strong interest in education. Chair of the advisory board of the Digital Hub in Buncrana too, which is a recently new initiative. What is the highlight then? Or maybe it's just the 30 years. I don't know. It's up to you, Rena. What's the highlight of your political career?
I suppose getting the NTRIO office and the Garda station to Buncrana. Now, this is going back a wee bit in time. But this was when we talked about decentralisation, when decentralisation was a big thing. And we worked very, very, very hard to get a social welfare office in Trio and a Garda station to Buncrana. Now, by God, that was not easy. But we fought tooth and nail. And I remember there came a deadline when it was said, now, we talked about this for a long time, about getting us to Buncrana and getting us site and all of this. Then there came a deadline then out of the blue which said, any sites that are not already bought will not be getting the decentralisation from Dublin and other parts of the country. But because we fought so hard and we had the site bought, not that much before that deadline, we got, not only did we get the NTRIO office, but as part of that, we have the National Child Benefit Office in Buncrana. If you had a baby in Cork, you have to contact Buncrana to get your child registered and all of that.
Okay.
We also have the National Record section in Buncrana, and we have the headquarters of the Garda station, which is brilliant.
Okay.
In more recent times, we got the new Cockhill Bridge. And I remember myself and others going to a meeting in Dublin to meet the Minister, Pascal Donoghue at the time, who had the purse strings. And at that meeting, at the end of the meeting, Pascal had said we would get a footbridge. Now, there was a lobby group at that time, and I'm not going to mention any names, who only wanted a footbridge for Cockhill to get the children safely over to school. So he alluded then that we would get a footbridge. And I remember, and the rest of the councillors that are listening would be able to tell you this, I stood up at the meeting and I said, Pascal, I really appreciate the money for a footbridge in Cockhill. We are the entrance to North and Ishone. We have the parish church there. That's where the funerals are. We have a very large school there. We have 4 football pitches. We need a proper bridge in Cockhill.
Yeah.
And 3 weeks later, we got the money for the bridge. And that was fantastic.
Okay.
And it's working terribly well. There were backups there right out to Cockhill every day in the week. The footbridge was going to be no good to us. So we got that. Then we got the Swan Park, which is fantastic. The football there every day, not just on a good day, but every day. That is brilliant. And that was work done by a lot of councillors, not just me. Nobody should fool themselves to thinking that they can do all this on their own. It needs to be done collectively.
Well, Buncrana and councillors have always worked very well together.
Worked well.
Rena, listen, yes, thank you very much. I'm sure many within Fianna Fáil have been campaigning for you to try and change your mind, but I presume the lady's not for turning. You've made up
well,
your mind now.
Well, the parties do want me to rethink it, and they do want me to rethink it, and please change my mind. But no, I think I have to put family first this time. And just to thank you. I have a lot of people that I need to thank, particularly the electorate who kept me there for all this time. My family, as I said, and all the great camaraderie that we had in Lifford, the county council. And I cannot forget the media, yourselves in Highland and the Donegal papers, who have always been fair and balanced in your reporting, and the photographers who attended so many events and we'd call them to take one more photograph and all of that. So we just must remember all of that. So people were good to us. There were many good times. There were some lows as well, but it was mainly, mainly good times. And thanks very much for everything.
No problem. And listen, as I say, you're making the decision for all the right reasons. Who would begrudge you spending time with your lovely family? Have a we'll chat between now and then. But in any case, lots of good wishes coming in for you, and we wish you all the best in your retirement from elected politics. Thanks very much, Rena.
Thanks very much, Greg.
Take care, Councillor Rena Donaghy. There, wish Rena all the best from Marion and Pius, who says you've served your community well, and we hope you enjoy your retirement. Greg, what great sadness to hear Councillor Rena Donaghy's retirement. What a wonderful person, and Councillor as a whole will be sadly missed. Best wishes to her new venture. Another Rena is bowing. I'll come back to that one. It's a bit negative. I will allow it to be said, but just want to focus on the positive just for the moment. Best of luck to Rena on her retirement. You've done great work for the people of Innishowen over the years. I wish you well from Mary in Remelton. And just Rena's bowing out because she knows that Fianna Fáil will not do well because of Micah. Well, that remains to be seen. We're on the road tomorrow to mark or to celebrate Your Voice, Your Community. We're heading to the Colgan Hall in Carndonagh to celebrate International Women's Day in association with Innishowen Development Partnership. So join me from 9 a.m. where we'll speak to female farmers, change makers, the Ukrainian community and inspiring women. It should be a really interesting show. We'll have all the other usual stuff you would expect as well. There's a bit of music there. There's a choir turning up. You'll be able to watch the show as always if that's how you choose to watch the show or to consume the programme. We'll be broadcasting live, of course, across the airwaves too from 9. So that's a special show. It marks International Women's Day. It's part of Your Voice, Your Community, live from Carndonagh, the Colgan Hall in Carndonagh. I'm not sure if there's an opportunity for you to call in and say hello, but feel free to do so anyway. I'm in and out generally to stretch my legs. So we look forward to that. That's live tomorrow from 9. But as I say, for the most part, the show will be, as you would expect, but loads of additional features. If you're listening to us on the podcast, by the way, or listening overnight and you have a say in anything we've been talking about, please feel free to continue to engage with us. Email's probably the best. comments@highlandradio.com. They all get picked up. They all get read. All of our texts, all the communications get read, and we get just about as many of them on air as we possibly can or as much as time would allow. But that's where we have to leave it today. Thanks to Caroline Orr, who researched produced the show. Also Shannon, working flat out on the programme. We'll all make our way to Carndonagh now, and we'll chat to you tomorrow morning from 9.